Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Rary is Fundamental podcast, episode 10. Test your might. What's up, Internet? This is the Rary is Fundamental podcast, episode 10. I am your host, Ray Moraldi, but you also know me as Ray Ray. Video games. Been a huge part of my life. Huge. It's my escape from reality. I've been a gamer pretty much all my life, and I also have to admit that I'm not the best at keeping up with games because I have so many games that I have left unbeaten in the last 25 years or so. My first video game system was an Atari 2600, and the first game I ever played that I can remember, it was called Target Fun. It's a shooting gallery. The game ends after a certain amount of time or to whoever hits 99 points first, but the game that really ignited my love for video games was Space Invaders. Everyone knows what Space Invaders is, aliens coming down, and you try to shoot them all. I would emulate what my brother did, and then we'd go on forever with that game, to the point where, back then, in Atari, the score would only have 4 digits, so we'd play for so long that we'd go over 9,999 points, and then it goes back to 0, so we essentially, quote-unquote, flipped the score, and we'd do that 2-3 times over before we finally, you know, die and get sick of the game, basically. I've been into video games so much that I thought that I was going to have a career writing about it. That was pretty much one of my few dreams in life, really, when I was about 12 or 13. I wanted to write for the popular video game magazine called Electronic Gaming Monthly, or EGM, and I thought the review crew was the coolest thing ever. They'd write a little blurb for games that month, and they would rate the game from 0 to 10. So I thought that was the coolest job ever you can find. And the closest thing I got to it was I wrote for GameSpot when I was 19, back in like 1998. Then I would turn in reviews and stuff like that. I was then recommended to talk to Editor-in-Chief John Davison for EGM. Then we exchanged emails back and forth, and he told me to show his stuff. Then I wrote a half-assed review of Mario Kart 64. That didn't go too well. I could have done way better. Not saying that I was an excellent writer at 19, but I knew I could have done way better then. Then he finally emailed me back saying it's not good enough, and my dreams were dashed at that time. But of course now I make a living writing about basketball, so maybe at some point I will write about video games for a living. Maybe. We'll see. On the subject of video games, in this next segment, I talk to Sharif Jackson about the differences between video games then and now, what games were his favorites, and his mission when it comes to bringing diversity into video games. Check it out.
On the line, gamer, Nick fan, nerd. All about, you know, making gaming looking good and science looking good. Sharif Jackson, what's up, man?
What's up, man? I'm doing good, man. I like all the good. Anytime my name is followed by good, then I'm happy.
It's all about Sharif Jackson looking good then, right?
That's right, man. It's so funny because I've gotten a couple of comments where people think that I'm being vain and I'm trying to say that I'm like this super good looking individual. And I'm like, not really. It's not like I'm not like a trying to pimp some Kardashian kind of brand or something. You know, that's not what I'm about.
Yeah. And it's big as you're looking at games, and then you're checking out, like, how the people of color are doing, basically, and you're just pointing out, like, why is it stereotypically this? Why is it stereotypically that? You know, so I think it's a really good cause that you're doing here.
Yeah, man, that's exactly what it is. I mean, the fact is that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, people of color and, like, women of color and different orientations and stuff that play games, and we just don't see ourselves represented a lot outside of the stereotypical trope. So, even with games I like, you know, I like to point these things out because a lot of times, you know, these are the conversations that I'm having with my friends anyway. So I just wanted to open that up to a wider audience.
So growing up, like games were I'm a little off right now because we just got finished watching the NBA playoffs. So I'm just kind of like, oh God, what the heck did I talk about right now? But, what were your favorite games growing up?
Oh man, there were so many. I'll give only a couple though. I mean, my first console was an Atari 2600. And my favorite games on that were definitely, Combat. Because, I have an older brother and Combat is basically all 2-player games where you're trying to shoot the crap out of the other person. Right. So we played a lot of, Combat. And, also I know that the Atari 26 port of Pac-Man is usually panned, for being horrible. But as a young kid, I thought it was awesome. You know, like just the fact that it was free and I didn't have to put like any quarters in it. I liked it a lot, you know, like I looking at it from a retrospective point of view, I could definitely see how, you know, it could be seen as, you know, sort of a indication of the gaming industry about to crash. But like back then I was just like, cool, free Pac-Man, you know.
Did you play E.T.?
I didn't play it until like, you know, when the emulators started coming out and that kind of stuff. I did not own E.T. Sad to say.
Yeah, I left it in the Philippines, man. Like, because I lived in the Philippines for 6 years, and you know, we brought our Atari there, and we owned E.T., Raiders of the Lost Ark, Space Invaders, all those games, and we ended up leaving there when we returned here to the States. So I'm kind of sad that it's still there. Like, I wish I brought it over here just so I can like say, hey, yeah, guess what? I own the worst game in history over here, E.T. and I didn't get it. I still don't get it. It's just like you're just rolling around, Reese's Pieces and whatever. I'm just like, okay.
Yeah.
You drop down and you get up. You drop down, you get up. Like, what?
It is a really, like, it's a really bad game. And I think a lot of times now with gaming press and stuff, I think there's a lot of exaggeration in terms of what's a horrible game and what's a great game. This is, like, objectively a bad game. Like, it is just, like, I think they had about 6 or 8 weeks to develop it, so they kind of just, because they wanted to get it out in time for the movie, and the Christmas season, so like they just like completely mailed this thing in, and it was terrible. And then they like made more copies of Atari than there, I mean, they made more copies of the game than there were the console. So it was like just guaranteed to end up in that New Mexican landfill, like.
Yeah, and they just found those cartridges recently, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Yeah. I can't believe that they're all buried in that landfill over there. Like, how many cartridges were buried there? I don't know the number, but
I'm sure it was hundreds of thousands because, like, they, you know, they printed up so many copies and they thought that, like, that, like, people would just buy it up, like, without thinking and buy multiple copies, and no.
Now, I'm still an old school gamer at heart. Like, I still play Super Nintendo. I still play Sega Genesis. I still play a lot of PS1 games. What about you? Like, are you still, do you still stick to the old school, or are you trying to stay current with everything?
Well, I mean, I definitely have to stay current for the videos and for the, Spawn on Me podcast that I'm on a lot.
Right.
But I have a lot of old school games as well. One reason that I really love the recent like Nintendo consoles, the Wii and the Wii U, is because they have the virtual, you know, like the virtual console where you can play all the games on there with sort of controllers that are actually good. I mean, that's the problem that I have with a lot of emulators on the PC is that, you know, it's really hard to get a good controller to play them with. So there are several games that I play probably once a year. Like I play like Super Mario Brothers 3, which is my favorite game of all time. I play that at least once a year, all the way through. I still play Link to the Past. I still play Double Dragon 2 on the NES, which I love. I still play Double Dribble, actually.
What funny thing is that, like, I just put a picture of Double Dribble before the NBA playoffs started, like, on my Instagram, and I was just playing that. Like, it's still so good. It's still so timeless. Sometimes you just pick up that game, and, you know, there's no need for, like, super fancy graphics and super fancy stats or whatever. You just pick it up and play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like both Double Dribble and Tecmo Bowl, I feel like, captured kind of the essence of the sports. Like, in terms of just, like, you're still excited while, like, playing and stuff. Obviously, you're not going to have the licenses and the rules and all that stuff, but, you know, it's still fun. And, you know, I'll still throw on, like, NBA Jam or Arch Rivals or one of those kind of, like pseudo basketball games as well, because I have so many fond memories of four-player NBA Jam in the arcades. I remember I used to love it because if you played four players and you beat the computer, like, you got, like, the next game free. So, like, we would just stay on and just try to beat all the teams. It was great.
Right. Yeah, so about gaming today, it's I feel like there's a lot more games now than you can count. Back then in Nintendo, like, you could basically play every game, right? But now it's like every game has a storyline. Every game is 30 hours long. Do you think games are much easier today than back when they were, like, 15 years ago?
I mean, I do hear that question a lot, and I think that the traditional answer is yes. And I do believe that to an extent. Like, I think that they're easier in terms of there's, like, tutorials. They give you, like, little pop-up menus. So, like, there's, like, a lot more of, like, hand-holding there. But what makes games from back then a little easier is that they were kind of easy to learn but hard to master. So it was much easier to grab the basic concepts of older games, but it was much harder to master them in such a way to be awesome at, like, a game. Whereas now, I think it's much easier to get into a game, but, like, a lot of time those basic concepts are much weaker and just don't feel as good, and they're really trying to capture you with, like, the story and the epicness of the, you know, characters and, like, stuff. But when it comes down to it, it's an interactive medium, right? Like,
yeah,
like, I like story, but the game has to feel good. The gameplay has to feel good. Like, the jumping or whatever has to feel good, regardless of, you know, how much you pay your voice actors, you know, to deliver, like, monologues and that kind of thing.
Yeah, people always bring up Ninja Gaiden from the old school. It's like, yeah, back then we had to struggle through stage 6 like 4 or 5 times just to get to the end or whatever. So they always bring that as an example of gamers being quote-unquote more awesome and harder back in the day. You agree?
I mean, it's just a different kind of gaming, man. You know, that was still that arcade-like mentality that developers had, where they wanted to, you know, pump as many quarters out of you as possible, so they made things incredibly cheap. You know, like, they made those stupid Ninja Gaiden birds, like, respawn every time you went, like, a half inch to the left, you know, to redo a jump, you know. I found it really interesting when Capcom... I don't know if you got a chance to play, like, Mega Man 9 and 10 when Capcom like releases.
Not yet.
Yeah, so, like, those are basically, those retain the cheapness of the original series of Mega Man games. So, like, you know, the enemies, like, they respawn all the time. As soon as you jump, like, somebody will just, you know, just, like, knock you down. And I found the response really interesting, because a lot of people were turned off by that, because, like, they wanted the old school game but with new school conventions. So, like, they wanted to be able to save, like, whenever they wanted. Like, they wanted to, like, be able to, you know, to not lose their, like, energy tanks, or, like, be able to, like, get them back, you know. So I feel like gamers now want kind of the best of both worlds. And I think a lot of times that's kind of, like, impossible. Either you want old stuff or new stuff, you know?
You know, that's interesting, because back then we would struggle to go through passwords where there's, like, 64 characters, and each character is either a number or a letter of an alphabet. That thing is so painful. Like, I'm glad for when you can save any time you want, basically.
Yeah, it was really bad, man. I still have conversations with my brother about this. We memorized the passwords for this Nintendo game called a River City Ransom.
Uh-huh.
It was an awesome game, but the passwords were like 3 lines of maybe 20 or 25 characters each. and they were like lowercase, uppercase, numbers. Mm-hmm. I think there might have been symbols. I'm not sure, but like, and we had them memorized. So like, we would like go into the game and like we would put them in, and we would get like all our money and our upgrades, mm-hmm. and like all that stuff. Yeah, it was definitely, you know, just a different kind of gaming back then. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I love kind of the auto saving and all that stuff, and like cloud saves and like all that stuff now. But I still have, you know, a little bit of nostalgia for like putting my password in the back of the notes section of the instruction manual, you know.
Yeah.
And put that back up.
I'm kind of the same way, because like, if you remember a game called Super Hangout for Sega Genesis.
Yes.
I still remember the password to get all the cash and make your motorcycle much faster, and it's terrible. Like, why do I even have that password memorized? It's like 32 characters and like numbers and letters. It's like, why do I have that? I've had it in my head since I was like 12, maybe. God.
Yeah.
We need a lot.
Yeah. Go ahead. You know what? I think about it like the same way as now a lot of people have trouble memorizing phone numbers because they just put them in their cell phones, right?
That's true too. Yeah.
Whereas I can still rattle off numbers of people I haven't called in years because you had to know them, you know, like you had to know.
Yeah.
Them back in the day.
I know. It's terrible. I still remember my ex-girlfriend's number. Oh God, I got rid of that.
Call her right now.
Let's do it right now.
We'll be right back, and when we come back, we'll have more Sharif Jackson in a minute.
Hey, this is Matthew Mercer, voice of Abe the Trapper from Evolve, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast.
Here's some more gaming talk with Sharif Jackson, who makes gaming look so good.
These days, when I play games, it's mostly a Japanese RPG. And it's like a full-time job trying to go through them, man. It's like right now I'm playing through Tales of Graces F for PS3. I don't know if you've played that one yet, or
I have not.
If you're into JRPGs.
I haven't played one to completion in a long time. and I actually didn't own a PS3 until much later in the console cycle. Basically, when they started kind of lowering the price when the PS4 was being announced is when I got one. So I missed out on a lot of the PS3 era of console games. But yeah, I don't – on one hand, I want to say that I don't have time for the JRPGs when – I look at some games now that I spend 100 hours on, like I have the time. It's just, it's just the grinding of it that I can't really do anymore.
Like
I haven't found one that has kind of captured me enough that I'm willing to do that when there's so many other things where I can jump in, have fun and jump out.
You're one of those guys that has like 100 games, right? Like I do at the moment. Like I have like 200 games sitting here and half of them I haven't beaten.
Yep.
And I say, oh, I don't have the time when I really do. I just want to put forth the effort of just like going through from the beginning and finishing them, right?
That's absolutely me. You've described me to a T.
Yeah, because like I still have Metal Gear Solid 3 sitting here. And I got to one boss and then I stopped playing because I couldn't beat him.
Yeah.
That's it.
So, yes. Yeah. That's like another big difference, I think, in terms of gaming now and back in the day is back in the day, I don't remember ever stopping a game because I couldn't beat the boss. I would just keep trying. Like I would just keep going. Now, if like, you know, if I feel like it gave an honest effort, I'll just be like, all right, guess I got to put this game away for a little bit and come back to it. Maybe, I don't know, a couple weeks, couple months or whatever. And then without a doubt, when I come back, I beat the boss in the first try.
Almost every time. I've done, I've done that before. Even when I was like, when I first beat Final Fantasy 3/6 for Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
You beat the game, right?
Yes,
you beat that game?
I did.
Okay. So I got stuck at Kefka, right? And I was like, oh, I don't want to beat this guy. Like, I couldn't beat him. A week later, I returned and beat him in the first try.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. It happens like that. But also, I think the reason why we stopped playing is because we're adults now. We have to be adulting somewhere. And, you know, we have responsibilities now. It's like, oh, but we have other things to do now instead of, like, trying to beat a video game, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's exactly kind of what it is you know, like, I only have a limited amount of time to game. So most of the time I prefer something where I know if I play for 30 minutes to an hour, I can enjoy it as opposed to spending, like, 30 minutes grinding against some lower level enemies, you know, like, I don't know. It's yeah, it just doesn't fit, like, kind of my life anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I think that's like one reason why, like, first person shooters and sports games are so popular, because, like, you can, you know, just like kind of jump in and, like, have fun, and then you can just leave and be like, all right, that was cool, you know.
I suck at first-person shooters. Like, I haven't, like, really, like, I barely started picking up, like, those types of action games where you shoot people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sleeping Dogs. I love Sleeping Dogs for PS3 or Xbox 360.
Yeah, it's a good game.
But for the most part, like, I suck at them ever since with GoldenEye. Because my friends keep beating me in GoldenEye, and I just, like, oh, God, I'm terrible.
Yeah, well, I like Sleeping Dogs because it didn't focus as much on the shooting. Like, like the melee system in that game was really good. Like, it was
fantastic,
really intricate.
Yeah.
Which I thought made it that aside from, like, the setting, is what made it different from sort of the other, like, Grand Theft Auto style open world games. Was, like, the brawling was outstanding.
Yeah, I've never been in a Grand Theft Auto game either, but the thing about Grand Theft Auto is, like, you can just play that game forever. You don't have to beat the game. You can just go around the open world and do stuff, like, you know, driving around, running around people, killing people, doing prostitutes, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And the interesting thing about the latest one, Grand Theft Auto 5, is that they have, like, you can just, like, go to a golf course and play golf. And the golf game is, like, as intricate as a full-out, like, EA Sports Tiger Woods golf game. Like, it's ridiculous the amount of detail that they put into the mini games, because they know that a lot of people buy the games not to finish the story. They just buy it to drive around and say, oh, well, like, there's a tennis court. Let me try some tennis. Whoa, this is like virtual tennis. Awesome.
Yeah, and there's something really, really meta about, like, oh, I'm going to sit down and watch TV while you watch your main character watch TV. Like,
yeah.
Okay. You know? But, yeah, Grand Theft Auto, like, I think I also kind of changed gaming, too, because of its open world system, basically.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That absolutely changed things. I think that, you know, obviously what made kind of, like, the headlines was the violence and the prostitute stuff, but I think that its real contribution was sort of bringing it back to sort of that kind of feeling that you have, and, like, I don't think a lot of people make this comparison, but I'm gonna do it anyway, kind of like that feeling that, like, you have when you first play a game like Zelda, and you feel like you can kind of go anywhere and, like, stray off the main mission and throw chickens and shoot arrows and do these games in the town. And, like, you don't have to progress if, like, you don't want to. I think that, like, GTA kind of brought that mentality into a modern gaming engine, whereas, like, you know, like, you can kind of, you know, do what you want. And, yeah, like, that do what you want can include some pretty heinous stuff. But, that, like, that to me is more of an eye into the player as opposed to an eye into what the game is telling you to do.
So what are you playing right now currently?
Well, currently, I'm playing a bunch of stuff, man.
Yeah, well, I know us gamers, it's like, we're going to work on something, and we're going to work on, like, our old games, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I've been playing quite a bit of Mortal Kombat 10.
How is that?
It is really, really good. And I kind of can't believe that it's good. Because I originally wasn't going to buy it because I made a gaming video based on Mortal Kombat 9, which I thought was pretty bad in terms of just the way that the characters looked, like the voice acting was terrible. And like I'm mainly talking about like the story mode of it, you know. The actual fights were like pretty good, but like the story mode was like horrible. So like a lot of people said, hey, you got to do another one for Mortal Kombat 10. So I was like, all right. So like I bought the game and the story mode is actually really good. Like the women look like regular women, like they kick ass, like they're not just like wearing like dental floss. Like around their bodies. There's like a very diverse cast. Like it's actually funny at the right places. Like I don't know if they like hired out the script writing or the voice acting because it could not have been the same people that have done that series because it's actually pretty good. I think it, especially if you had a chance to play Injustice, which is a fighting game with the DC comic universe that came out I think about 2 years ago now. This game is basically that but with Mortal Kombat characters, and it's very good. I would definitely recommend it.
The funny thing about Mortal Kombat is that like I thought when the first game came out way back in 93, oh my goodness, it was super overrated, I thought, because the game wasn't that good. It just became a popular game because of the gore and the fatalities and everything.
Yeah,
Mortal Kombat 2 was when it became really, really good, I thought.
I totally agree with you. I thought Mortal Kombat 1, gameplay-wise, was very poor. You know, the only thing about it that I appreciated was that it was very, like, visceral. And, like, I don't just mean, like, the fatalities. I mean, like when you uppercutted somebody, you, like, felt it. Like the screen would like kind of do like a subtle shake, and like the sound of it was just like it felt much more impactful than when you hit someone in Street Fighter 2, you know. Mm-hmm. So I remember playing Mortal Kombat 1 and just being like, please add some better gameplay for the second one, and they did with like Mortal Kombat 2. Like they really nailed it.
Yeah, the stage fatalities are still fun. The secrets with the Toasty and everything. Like, I love what they did with Mortal Kombat 2. From then on, like, I barely played the series. I did play the beat 'em up one. What's it called? I think it's Shaolin.
Oh, yeah.
Shaolin
Monks. Yeah.
For PS2.
Yeah, I forgot the name of it, but, like, it's was so.
I think it's Shaolin Monks. Yeah. Not that one. Maybe it is. I forget. But it was for PlayStation 2. Not the Mythologies one, but the PS2 one.
Oh, not that one. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I heard that one was really bad, though. I should try to play that one.
Yeah, I played a little bit of it. I didn't enjoy it.
I read the reviews back in the day when EGM was still, you know, really popular and GamePro was still popular and got really, really bad reviews. So.
I pretty much lived and died by waiting for those EGMs and GamePros to come in the mail. That was always a glorious day. Like my brother and I would just pour over those magazines.
You know, before some people don't know this, but my goal back then was to write for EGM, be part of the review crew. That was like my thing. You know, it's like I want to be one of those guys that race those games from 1 to 10. You know,
nice.
yeah. Instead, I ended up writing about basketball. Whoops.
Now, have you ever sent anything into EGM, like into the mail section?
No, not the mailing section, no. But here's what I did back in the day. I was 18, 19. Websites were starting to grow, the .com boom and everything. I wrote for GameSpot for a little bit.
Oh, nice.
And I wrote for GameSpot, and they told me later on to try out for EGM, and I put in a half-assed review of Mario Kart 64 back then.
Nice.
And I wasn't accepted, so that was my only try towards EGM. I didn't do it again. So maybe I can do it now, but back then that was a bad effort.
Yeah. Well, you know, I find the most interesting thing about EGM and games and GamePro is that, I don't know about you, but like when I was a kid, I thought that the people that were writing it were like these sort of super professional, like grown-up adults that wore suits and like negotiated with all these guys. And then like once all these game journalists started getting podcasts and they started talking about how it was back then, it was basically us running a magazine.
Yeah. They're nerds just like us, guys. Yeah. You know? It's like, it's a shocking discovery. It's like, wow, they're like us, except older or something, you know?
Yeah, because, like, I don't know if, like, you remember the section of E-Jam, which was called, like, Quarterman?
I do remember Quarterman, yes.
Yes, yes. So, like, I remember I thought that this was, like, this super secret guy that went to all the latest meetings and whatever. And then, like, once like, the 1UP show and all these podcasts started coming out, which were mostly former editors, like, they were all like, yeah, so Quarterman, like, you know, basically everybody was Quarterman. Like, we all just contributed stuff to it, you know? And, like, there were, like, a million, like, Sushi X's, you know, that reviewed fighting things. And it was really interesting to, like, hear about the sort of how, like, it was basically just, like, a bunch of gaming nerds that started stuff and basically used, like, guerrilla tactics to get their stuff out. Like, they didn't have connections or anything. They pretty much bootstrapped a lot of that stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, E-Gen was my favorite. Game Pro, there was this magazine called Video Games and Computer Entertainment back in the day. And I look at strategy guides, like, yeah, there's the Mega Man 2 map.
One more break and one more song before we have the last part of this interview with Sharif Jackson.
It's Kristen Ledlow from NBA Inside Stuff, and I was once on the Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast. Once. That was enough.
So, Mortal Kombat announcer guy, what do you want to do with this interview?
Finish him!
Wow, you have to be that emphatic. Here's the last part of the interview with Sharif Jackson.
Five favorite games of all time. You mentioned Mario 3. What are the other four?
Oh, that's tough, man. Alright, so Zelda 3 I would put in, I would put up there.
I love Link to the Past. I love that game.
Yeah. Man, all time. Let me see. For me, I would say Street Fighter II Turbo Edition.
Oh, man.
I would put up so there. I still think that's the penultimate Street Fighter to me. I know that a lot of people I know that there's a lot of people that like prefer Part 3 because of the parrying and all that stuff, and or like the Alpha series, but I think Turbo is still the number one to me. Oh man, let me think here. Deus Ex, the original in 2000 is one of my favorites as well. And for a fifth game, I don't want to pick another Mario game because I think because like I was gonna say Super Mario Galaxy, but
Galaxy's so good.
Yeah, that would probably be in my second tier, but. I think another great game, I will say The Last of Us.
I haven't finished that yet. I'm working on that. I was working on that, and then I got sidetracked.
Yeah, I mean, The Last of Us is one of those games that just – it's one of the few games that accomplishes a cinematic experience, but you can control
it. Is,
I mean, it is
that's
incredible.
That's what you call it, man. It's an experience just going through that game, man. It's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you deal with the emotions of the characters. Like, there's very few times where I feel like I can identify with, like, you know, a young girl character, but I really identified with, like, Ellie and this kind of struggle that she kind of dealt with in the whole game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend to finish it and to play the Left Behind DLC.
Okay.
It is,
I will do.
It is a great, great, great game.
I asked this with all my friends. What game have you paid full price for and then you regret it later on?
Oh, this is almost easy because...
Okay.
So the late... I will say the latest one of this is Watch Dogs.
Mm.
So this came out last year. It was,
yeah,
it was based in Chicago. It was supposed to be like the big Ubisoft next-gen game, and it was terrible. Terrible.
Yeah, it's funny because I saw so much hype about it, and then after that, it kind of disappeared right after.
Yeah, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. The graphics were great, you know, all that stuff, but the gameplay was completely boring. The depiction of, like, Chicago was, I thought, was pretty bad. Just made basically every white person rich and every black person poor, which was ridiculous. You know, it was way too long, it droned on, and it just really suffered from this sort of trope of, like, disgruntled white guy with a mysterious past that talks in a hushed tone. And it was just boring. It was so boring, and it was one of the times where I actually, you know, I wanted to play through it because we were talking about it on the Spawn on Me podcast, and, like...
Uh-huh.
I was like, maybe there's some grand revelation at the end, and it just wasn't. It, like, from the beginning to the end, it was just a complete waste of time.
Man.
Yeah.
You respond to that pretty quickly. It seems like you've bought a lot of games for full price and regretted it thereafter.
I have, but, like, Watch Dogs is one of the ones that hurts the most because, like, the trailers were good. It was at E3 for, like, 2 or 3 years, so it was in development for a long time. And I had real high hopes for it, you know? And it just... I just couldn't believe how they screwed that game up. Yeah, it was terrible.
Okay, last question. Game that you feel most accomplished beating?
Most accomplished beating? I'll start by one that I feel the most accomplished, well, that I would feel the most accomplished if I ever beat it. And that's Batman for... Oh, no? Okay, all right.
I was gonna say Battletoads, like, what?
No. I actually beat Battletoads.
What?
I did.
Are you serious? I'm still working on that. I got to stage 6.
I only beat it once, though. Like, I can't repeat it unless I, you know, use the emulator save states, whatever. But, like, in terms of the, like, original... NES version, I did beat that. But, like, that's not my number one accomplished
game.
Wow. My number one accomplished game was actually the first Metroid.
Oh.
And the reason because Battletoads, it's hard, but it's straightforward hard. It's like, you know what you have to do, it's just impossible to do it. With Metroid, I got so lost in that game. Because, you know, unless you're looking at a map from Nintendo Power, it's not straightforward where you have to go next. You know?
Right.
And I was trying my best to not use those maps. So when I beat that game, I still don't even know if I've ever equaled that level of accomplishment because I literally couldn't believe that it was the end. I kept thinking, oh, man, this is going to lead to something else. I beat like a mother brain. So I'm going to have to crawl up this like whole shaft and like there's going to be some super mother brain at the top or something. And when it was over, I just remember I just laid back and I was just like, holy crap. Like this is what games are about. Even though I was like, you know, I was young. I mean, I was like 7 or 8 years old.
Wow.
But I was just like, this is incredible. I think that's probably the most accomplishment just for the mere fact that they never handheld you and told you what to do. Like you literally had to go back and say, oh, now I have this weapon. Now I can climb up this part or like open this door or like go down this thing. It was really, really, cool how like, I feel like it basically emulated how you would feel as a bounty hunter in this strange world, you know, like being lost and not being able to, you know, just like bring up, you know, some thing to like help you or things like that. It was really cool.
Then being able to survive the entire thing. Yeah, I think mine would be Ninja Turtles 1 for Nintendo. That's just a terrible game, by the way. This
freaking game sucks.
That game sucks, but I beat it.
I tried to force myself to like it because I was such a big Ninja Turtle fan growing up.
Yeah.
And that game, like the only highlight to that game to me was driving around in the turtle van. I was like, hey, if I could just do this all day, you know, that would be cool.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah. And Aaron was talking about the dam where you have to swim and defuse all 8 bombs, and they think that's the hardest part of the game. No, that is not the hardest part of the game.
That is the hardest part of the game.
No, it is not. You go further into the game, like the airport, oh god, it's terrible there. And then you get to the Technodrome in the last stage, oh my god, the enemies are everywhere. Did you beat it?
I will admit that I beat it only with the assistance of an emulator, but
you saw the airport and there's lava there.
No, those last boards are very hard, but the thing that makes the dam hard is that just the time, like they just don't give you enough time to do stuff. And I think it's like also that like you just get for myself, I just got so frustrated. Mm-hmm. Whereas I didn't feel like I got like super frustrated on those other ones. Like they were hard, but I always felt like I was getting better at it. That dam, I never felt like I was getting better at it, especially with that stupid seaweed. I mean,
they just try. It seems to like just grab you out of nowhere. It's like magnetic, right?
Yeah. It literally felt like it was. And I also think that a part of it was that the controls weren't that good.
Well, yeah, they're not.
and they made like the seaweed like in such a pattern that you needed great controls to navigate it. So you almost always ran into it. I mean, I don't know. I just felt like I just never had enough time, and like I would always kind of die by seaweed like before I catch it. And it was just.
I might agree with you on the time though, because I think I pretty much perfected the dam. Like I can beat that no problem, but I still only have 22 seconds left when I beat that dam every single time. And then that music goes, and it's like, you know, that frightening go faster type of music or whatever. You know, it starts coming on when I beat that. So yeah, I think I agree with you on that one. You barely have enough time to beat that thing.
Yeah, it was and like I'm pretty sure that you could probably find YouTube videos or whatever of people like I guess beating it really quickly, but it was just to me a horribly designed level. It really had nothing to do with the Ninja Turtles. They didn't really swim much in the cartoon series. I don't know if they did in the comic book, because I didn't read a lot of the comic book, but you know, this basically, it was just bad. Like I feel like this is something that they got from another game that they were working on. And like they were like, hey, let's just put this in the Ninja Turtle game.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Sharif, where can we find your work?
So you can find me at sharifjackson.com, sharreef.com. That'll bring you to Science Looks Good, the Science blog, Gaming Looks Good, the Gaming blog. And I'm basically Sharif Jackson on all social networks, Twitter, Facebook, Google+, all that stuff. You can find my podcast, Operation Cubicle, where we talk about being geeks of color in the corporate world, at operationcubicle.net. And I also am a frequent guest on the Spawn on Me podcast, which is at thespawnpointblog.com.
And I appreciate your fight for diversity in gaming. Thanks so much, Sharif.
All right, man. Thanks.
Thank you so much to Sharif Jackson for talking gaming with me. We can go for hours and hours, I'm sure, when it comes to video games. Follow him on Twitter at Sharif Jackson, you can spell right, S-H-A-R-E-E-F Jackson, and check out his podcast Operation Cube and Spawn on Me, as he mentioned a few minutes earlier in the show. And as mentioned before, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
You can also download the show at rayray.net, and you can also find the show on Stitcher. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at rayrayisfun. I couldn't fit rayrayisfun in the middle on that, and the limited Twitter handles. And you can follow my personal Twitter account at thenolookpass. And if you like NBA basketball, since most people know that's where my toast is buttered, you can check out my NBA writings at that NBALotteryPick.com and thenolookpass.com. Gal Pal Squad, thank you for keeping me sane. Everybody, thank you for listening. Sharif Jackson, thank you for coming on the show. And remember now, Ray Ray is fundamental, and you don't need a library card to check me out. Until the next episode, party people.
You know, it's not even the Knicks that I'm upset at now. It's J.R. Smith, man. Like, there's no way this guy can win. There's no way this guy can win. No way. Game over, yeah!
Moded.